And welcome back to the Drive Time. Yeah, that was a little guess who for you. We're going to cut that a little short, though, because we've got Rob Washburn here in the studio for Consider This Live. This is your live Wednesday update of, what's going on? The topic du jour today. We're going to carry on the topic of healthcare, right? Hey, Rob?
Yeah, Dave, I really heard in your discussion earlier with the Ontario Health Coalition and Chris Levitt, and sounded really interesting, the things you were talking about in relationship to the federal government and its transfer payments.
Absolutely. I mean, we've got a government that, quite frankly, is committed to destabilizing, defunding, and deregulating healthcare in this country. That's the commitment Stephen Harper made to his base when he ran for the leadership, and that's the commitment he's still moving forward with.
But you know what's really interesting, Dave, about all of this is how does it play here at home? I mean, you know, when you start to talk about what's going on at the Northumberland Hills Hospital, lots and lots of stuff that we should be thinking about, especially in terms of the pressures that they're under. I know that just earlier this week, there was talk about this third-party review of the Northumberland Hills Hospital as they face these fiscal challenges. And every year they've been coming up with a bit of a deficit, and they're trying to get their heads around what can they do. Because, you know, it's about services. And you know, back in 2010, we watched that incredible slashing of services here locally. There was huge protests that led by some very high-profile citizens, and many, many people complained bitterly. There were petitions. It was a very serious time back then. Do you remember that at all?
I do remember that. I remember the protests. I remember when people were saying, well, what kind of hospital do we have here? I mean, do we have an acute care hospital? Do we have an emergency hospital? And, of course, the provincial government came up with designations for hospitals. And if you were designated as one, then you could not be the other.
Absolutely. I mean, we saw a deficit of $1.8 million back then. Mm-hmm. They were talking about no outpatient rehab services. They were talking about cutting 45 full-time jobs. They were cutting 16 alternative level care beds, 18 complex care beds. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you know, when you think about it, Northumberland Hills Hospital at that time, or it still is today, I mean, it's designed to hold 137 beds. And back in 2010, there was only 110 that were in operation at that time. And then after the cuts in 2010, it went down to 84 beds. So there are rooms up there in our hospital that are sitting empty because there just isn't the funds.
Well, what Doug Mann said, and he is the chair of the NHH board, he said, look, funding for our hospital is simply not keeping pace. They're getting more patients. Sicker patients mean more staff and higher costs for drugs and supplies. That's what he said in his press release. There's so much more he said here. But it gets to the issue that we were talking about earlier, because, you know, he talks about patients being sicker and more patients. But as this federal government continues its slash and burn tactics with regards to health transfers, the provincial governments are not able to pick up the freight when it comes to that. So what are we going to see? You're going to see more people, sicker people, who quite frankly don't have access to a family doctor for a lot of them, whose only access to a physician or any kind of care is to go to the emergency room.
Well, here's just some numbers to get us thinking about this. Back in 2005, there were 34,000 visits to our emergency department. Do you know in the last year, 2013, 2014, 31,000, 3,000 less visits. Now, is it because we're healthier or is it because of other reasons? It would be interesting to know why has there been a drop in this. Admissions, this is a different trend. Back in 2005, 2006, 4,000 people were admitted to the hospital. Last year, 4,240. So we've seen a somewhat increase in that. Births. Get this, 2005, there were 523 births at the hospital. Last year, 458. Now, is that a demographic shift? Is that people are going elsewhere to have babies? Surgical cases, another great example. 4,247 surgical cases here at the hospital back in 2005. Last year, 5,226. We're doing more surgeries. What's the reason for that? Dialysis. back in 2005, 7,196 dialysis cases. Last year, 6,924. But I know that one of the services that got outsourced from the hospital was dialysis. But still, you know, what's behind that? This is the big one that shocked me today when I was looking this up. Back in 2005, chemo. 1,411 patients being treated for chemotherapy. Ready for this? 5,598 last year. Five-time increase in cancer treatment. Incredible. Incredible numbers. And you know, I'm not an expert. I can't explain it. But, I mean, that's right out of the annual reports. And incredible increases in services. I know one of the things that you feel very strongly about is community mental health. Last year alone, 32,183 cases, mental health, dealing with mental health. And yet we saw things like that young, poor young man that, and yeah. You know, I mean, why is stuff like that happening in our hospital? So all sorts of interesting numbers there, Dave. And I'm not sure, you know, do you go to Stephen Harper and you say, okay, we need all this money, but is it going to find its way to the doors of Northumberland Hills Hospital?
Mm-hmm.
That's the question. And I wonder, you know, these local integrated health networks, I think there is a huge lack of accountability for these. I mean, you know, you only get so many dollars.
That's right.
And, you know, it's not like, you know, when we talk about deficits in a business where, you know, you need to improve your business strategy or you need to advertise more, get in more business, generate revenue. That's not how these guys work. They you know, the Lins shill out their money. Mm-hmm. The hospital has to sit there. They say, well, what are we going to do? How are we going to do this? If they gave them more money, they could provide the services. So, you know, and then you go one step up the chain. Well, where's the provincial government? They're not passing it down. But until I think we see more transparency with the Lins, I mean, mm-hmm. we don't elect the people who sit on those boards. They're all appointees.
Mm-hmm.
Their meetings are not open to the public. You can't make a deputation. Now, they'll come out and they'll do consultations when it suits them and on the topics that they're interested in.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't. It's not like the school board where we elect somebody to go off and represent our interests there. Who's in there fighting for us? Who's in there trying to do it? You know, it's our poor hospital CEO, you know, our staff here. They're, you know, what can they do?
Well, exactly. And where do they get to go? I mean, it's not like they can go to the Lynn and say, we'd like to discuss the issue. We'd like to talk. Because the Lynn says, here's your budget. Make it work. You know, it's again, it's the same old story here. We've got a group of people who are unelected representatives, and they represent the provincial government at a local level through the local integrated health networks. But how effective is that integration? How effective is that use of dollars? That's really the question here, especially when we consider the costs are going up. We know the hospital is on its way to seeing a balanced budget. At least that's what their goal is. They have a small fiscal surplus in 2014-2015's plan, $75,000, which is less than 0.1%, folks. So there's virtually no room, you know. Here is their fiscal progress report. This is from Cecilia Naismith, by the way, of Northumberland Today. The third-party review of Northumberland Hills' chronic fiscal challenge is one step closer to fruition with the selection of a coaching team. Now, the hospital issued an invitation for proposals on November 7th of 5 qualified candidates, 3 of whom submitted formal proposals. JD and Associates were the successful applicant. In a press release announcing the selection, the hospital expressed confidence that the team led by Janice Dusek and supported by Norman Reese and Zanita Hergy bring to the task a high level of health system-funded expertise, clinical knowledge, and practical experience. Hospital also announced that a steering committee has been formed to support the process and receive the team's recommendations, in addition to the representatives of the hospital's senior management members, which include John Hudson, Bill Gerber, who are board members, as well as members of its finance and audit committees. Dr. David Broderick and Dr. Mukesh Bhagavi are physicians. Stuart Sutley, a representative of the Central East Local Integrated Health Network. The steering committee expects to have the coaching team's findings and recommendations in hand early in the new year. But at this point, the fiscal year ends in March, and the hospital projects a significant operating shortfall of $1.45 million against a budget of $65 million, or about 2%. So over the years, the province has required hospitals to adhere to service accountability agreements, which set out expectations. Now, there's a little more to this story, but I mean, what it really comes down to is, here's your budget. make it work.
And there's been no inflationary increases being given over the last several years. Nope. So, I mean, even if you just try to hold the status quo, you're fighting a losing battle. But here's the thing that corked me. I mean, you go back to March of this year when they were getting ready to introduce the current budget that we've got. And they cut three management positions. Mm-hmm. They reduced ambulatory clinic. Again, I mean, that's not the first time they've reduced those hours. They reduced less operating room hours for elective non-urgent surgery. They've increased room rates. So, you know, when most of us get stuck in a ward. But for those who have insurance and you know, can get semi-private and private rooms, those rates went up. They closed the cafeteria on the weekends. And despite all this, here we are. We're back. We're at a $1.4 or $5 million deficit again. Mm-hmm. And we're not cutting fat here, folks. We're cutting meat off the bone.
Absolutely. And the point made there, because, you know, everyone says, oh, well, all that money gets spent at the top level. All those guys who are on the wish list, as they call it, or you know, those people are making so much money. Why don't we cut those people at the top? Well, we've done that. We've done that, or at least made those attempts. So it just shows you that $60 million, quite frankly, isn't enough money to manage the care, not given the numbers we've heard anyway with the increases of visits.
Well, and, I mean, you know, when you think about things like chemotherapy, those are not cheap things to deliver. But here's something else. In terms of staff, back in 2005, there were 13 midwives operating out of the hospital. Today, there are 16. In terms of active associates who are active, there were 50 in 2005. Today, 74. So we've seen increases in staff. Also, the courtesy physicians who have
general practitioners you're talking about?
Yeah, 56 to 48. So we're back in 2005. We had 119 medical staff, and today 148. In fact, believe it or not, back in 2005, 561 total staff at the hospital. Today, 612. So the staff is growing, and that makes up about 52 to 55% of their total operating budget, mm-hmm. are wages. So is it really about staffing? Is it about cost of services? We've seen cuts in beds. We're seeing slashing to things that affect you and me when we go in there.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it comes down to, you know, where does our money go and how is it being spent? But ultimately, it's, as you were talking about earlier, it's this chain of money that comes down and filters down, mm-hmm. and we're underfunding the system. And until those LHINs get enough money or start sending us enough money, it's going to be like this. We're just going to keep seeing mm-hmm. reductions and reductions and reductions. I mean, we're going to end up being a friggin' first aid station here.
Well, and that's definitely not what we spent the money to build. That's for darn sure. I mean, and I go back to this. I mean, you know, when we got that hospital, when it was built, I want to say this. I mean, the fact is the money raised to build that hospital was raised right here in Northumberland County. We didn't get money from the province to build that hospital. We got the money to build that hospital. All we asked the province to do was provide us with everything we needed once we built the hospital. And even to this day, I mean, the fundraising efforts for the Northumberland Hills Hospital are, you know, everybody knows about it. Every time you turn around, there's a fundraiser. They've got to replace equipment that they have to buy and all this other stuff. So really, what is it getting from the provincial government in terms of funding that we aren't having to pick the slack up on?
Just to add to that, I mean, we're talking about $1 million a year in fundraising that comes from this community that goes into that hospital. You look in the annual report, they buy everything. I mean, it's crazy. Some small items as little as a couple hundred dollars right through to major equipment, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So you're right. I mean, we do pay, but is it really a premium? I mean, when you were talking earlier about the universality of healthcare, you know, are we getting a fair deal here? And, you know, a couple of weeks ago, we were just talking about something as simple as a rape kit for mm-hmm. women, and you've got to go off to a regional health center mm-hmm. to get the service you need. Yep.
And, we still don't have that here at the hospital. We've talked about it a couple of times. I don't know how much headway has been made with anyone else talking. I know you had a student make a phone call on behalf mm-hmm. of while they were doing a project for the college, and they were basically raked over the coals for even asking the question.
But, I mean, you know, fair enough when you look at the times of things that they're having to cut back on. I mean, when we were talking about cutting back on surgeries, or we're cutting back on ambulatory care services and rehab services and mm-hmm. all these kinds of things. The other thing that nobody really talks about very much is how long you stay in the hospital now. I mean, I just heard of a case recently where somebody was sent up for heart surgery in Peterborough and was home within 48 hours. And now they're back in the hospital again because, you know, they literally don't keep you in for, you know, as little time as possible, mm-hmm. and they're sending you home. And that's a whole other aspect that we never talk about, is the community care that's going on, the level of service. Mm-hmm. It's my understanding, and I can't tell you where the number came from, but it was about the last year or so, a quarter of hip and knee surgery patients were out in been discharged, and then something happens at home and they've got to be readmitted again, mm-hmm. because there's been a problem. We're such a hurry to get people out of the hospital. Talk to anybody in town, anywhere, and they've got a story. It's either, you know, some horror story, or at the other end of the spectrum, you know, effusive praise for the job that gets done at the hospital. But everybody's got a story about the hospital and mm-hmm. and the level of care that we're getting. It would be interesting to hear from people. I mean, you know, what sort of stories do they have about how they feel about the hospital? I've heard people even won't come here. They'll drive to Oshawa or Peterborough or Belleville because they won't come to Cobourg because they don't feel the service is good.
Mm-hmm. Well, and again, it really just comes down to the funding model for the most part. And we know at the federal government level, they've been reducing the funding. We know, I mean, they made an increase after the federal Liberals basically destroyed the system in terms of funding. They went back up to 23%. But as we discussed today with Natalie Mira, I mean, they were supposed to give us a guaranteed 6% increase annually for 10 years. That didn't actually come to fruition. And now they're talking about defunding. Now they're talking about pulling back on that. I mean, the federal government's commitment right now to healthcare is a lot of lip service, a lot of great photo opportunities. But as I said earlier, many federal conservatives, elected members of parliament, would like to get out of the funding of healthcare altogether. And some of them are actually proposing eliminating transfers and equalization payments instead of turning over revenues from federal goods and services tax. They're saying, no, we don't want to do that anymore. So much for universality, right?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, we talk about universal health care. I should be able to go into a hospital in Newfoundland and get the same level of care that I get in Toronto or Vancouver or Montreal. Mm-hmm. And without the proper funding. But there's an argument that says, well, it's provincial responsibility, therefore let the provinces pay for it.
Well, then, and if that's the case, then we should get 100% of any funds that are transferred to the federal government for health care. The federal government should be transferring 100% of that revenue then to the provincial governments, this whole idea of equalization. I mean, when Ontario fell into the pool for those provinces that were receiving equalization, the federal government did everything they could to change it. And they did. And they underfunded Ontario. They've done it to other provinces across the country. They did it to Saskatchewan for decades. You know, oh, well, it's based on population. I mean, the funding model as it sits right now, I don't even understand the funding model. It's not based on per capita. It's not based on the amount of taxes that they receive. What is it based on? Do we know?
No, and off the top of my head, I don't.
So, I mean, that's the question that we need to ask ourselves. And this is why this rally is being organized for this weekend, so that people can go to the member of parliament and say, we're not happy. You know what? Do Canadians not cherish healthcare? I mean, when you ask Canadians, what's one of the most important things that they enjoy about being Canadian? They always say access to universal healthcare. They always say it. It's the number one thing in poll after poll after poll. What is the one thing? That, and then employment, and then after that, the environment usually is number three. So, I mean, healthcare's always been number one. Why? Because it's an essential service. You know, in this country, it's always been sort of a given. It's been sort of a human right. But, you know, this current government, and unfortunately due to underfunding, same thing in the provincial government. I mean, they're doing everything they can to try and shore it up, from what I understand. 47% of our provincial budget goes to healthcare. But is that money being spent wisely? And that's the question we need to ask ourselves.
Well, and to answer that, I think we have to put it at the doorstep of these local integrated health networks. I mean, you've got a body there that is not accountable. There's no, you know, they do have people that are supposed to represent us, but we don't choose those people. We don't know what their agenda is. We don't know if there's just some lackey, some patronage appointment that's been sent down there to just be a yes person, mm-hmm. To whatever the Lynn's deciding, until we can get, you know, minutes of these meetings and agendas, and we can make deputations, and they become more democratic. I think that's one of the big things. And I know that, you know, one of the things Hudak was talking about in the election.
Well, he just wanted to get rid of them.
Period. Yeah. And I wonder to some extent if that's not what we really need here. I mean, I don't know what service they provide. And, you know, the benefits, we've just seen the regionalization of our health system. I mean, you know, you want major surgery, you're going to Belleville, you're going to Peterborough, you're going to Oshawa. Mm-hmm. And you know, that's fine to some extent. But, you know, when if you're a senior and you have a wife that doesn't drive and you're off in the hospital, how do you get up there, mm-hmm, to look after? And then when you get home, you know, it's great, we've got the community care, but, you know, if you need physiotherapy, it's prescribed. You get X number of visits, 4, 5, 6 visits. Once that's done, we're done. Now, if you don't have the means to which to pay for, you know, a private a physiotherapy clinic to help you out with whatever you need, mm-hmm, you don't have benefits, and most people don't. I mean, that's really, really expensive to get the proper care that you're going to need, and it's coming out of your pocket. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, that's the type of privatization we don't talk about.
Well, you know, if the federal government had their way, though, I mean, they're putting money back in your pocket. If you want to spend that money on physiotherapy, they've put it back into your pocket for that reason. $36,000 or $3,600 a year they've given back to the average Canadian. This is what they talk about. This is the whole idea of, you know, don't give me a tax cut. Provide the services, please. You know, I can't afford your tax cuts. And I, you know, I've said the same thing to Ernie Eves when he was the finance minister. I ran into him in Toronto. I said, Ernie, please, we can't afford your tax cuts. There's more buying power when you buy as a group, i.e. a provincial government, than there would be if you're just one poor schmo who's going into a service provider. I mean, you're basically, you're stuck to whatever they're offering.
It would be fascinating to just go back over the last year or two and look at the newspaper and see how many efforts there have been to raise money for people who are ill, mm-hmm, who cannot afford drug treatment, cannot afford the health care that their family faces. It's an emergency. I mean, that speaks volumes to the abject failure of the system. Mm-hmm. When you have to go out and appeal to your neighbors because you can't afford the health care that we, mm-hmm, we're all supposed to be entitled to. And I think that's where it gets a little scary. It was interesting. I was listening to your guests. I know they're from the Ontario Health Coalition. Now, the Ontario Health Coalition is a rather interesting organization. On their website, they talk a lot about all the groups that belong to it, et cetera. But most of those groups represent unions or associations of, mm-hmm, employees. Mm-hmm. These are employee groups that are talking about these kinds of things. And, you know, I think it's great that they're going in there, you know, they're going down to Mr. Norlock's office. But, you know, are they in it because they're trying to preserve jobs, or, you know, is it truly a noble cause? And you know, I would have appreciated to have got some clarity on that, because, you know, I think transparency is really important. Mm-hmm. I think it's important that we know what's motivating these people
From the conversation that I had with Natalie, and even before when I was talking to Chris, this is one of the reasons why they didn't call it a labor council protest, or didn't refer to it as a protest on behalf of XYZ organization. It's strictly a fairness for Canadians, fairness for all. That's the approach. That's why we didn't talk about the union's role in it. That's because their goal here is to not talk about because when people say, oh, unions, oh, well, it's just the unions then. They just represent working people. And they're saying, no, this is beyond unions. This is about, as you say, everyone's entitlement to health care. Because, mm-hmm, it's a guarantee in this country. We have access to health care. We're supposed to have universal access to health care. That was what the Health Act was about, you know, when they passed the legislation. And yes, successive federal governments have done everything they can to try and cripple it. And what they've done really is left the ball up to the provincial governments. You know, and we're talking about the LHINs, the local integrated health networks. I mean, the philosophy behind why they were set up was really because otherwise everything was being done from Queen's Park. Everything. And the people in Queen's Park have no idea what the needs are for the folks here in Northumberland County or the folks in Essex County or Durham region or any of those. And so that was the primary motivation behind setting up the LHINs. Now, again, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. And what we're seeing here is a lot of money being spent for, you know, the chairpersons and the people who work at these integrated health networks. Those people are earning a living.
Well, but more than that is their ability to control the mm-hmm. costs without accountability. Mm-hmm. It's a star chamber. It's a shield that protects the the provincial government. Says, oh, we spend X millions of, what did you say the percentage was earlier?
About 47%
of our budget. Look at how much we're spending on healthcare. Look at all these programs we're putting in. But what's really happening on the ground is that you and I don't get to have a say. And not exactly probably the most exciting meetings to attend, but, at least in things like with the Board of Education, we elect people. They go up. They are supposed to be accountable, those trustees. Maybe, mm-hmm. maybe not. We could debate that another day. But certainly, we at least have a bit of a voice. Somebody's running mm-hmm. on a platform. Somebody's going in there and advocating on our behalf. And, who's doing that for us now?
Well, actually, nobody, right? No. It's supposed to be our member of provincial parliament who does that. I mean, that's the guy, if you have questions about the Lynn, that's who you're supposed to be talking to. You know, you don't, because there really isn't anyone else. There really isn't. As you said, they are unaccountable. They are only accountable to the provincial government, who's given them the mandate to do what they do. So really, it's incumbent upon us to talk to the member of provincial parliament and say, hey, what the hell are they doing there?
And here's what's, some of the other effects of these Lynns is that what happens is the healthcare system becomes highly regionalized.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, Peterborough is part of this Lynn, but Belleville's not. So let's say you get sent for knee surgery to Belleville General because, again, it's a regional healthcare system. The only surgeon available is down in Belleville. Fast enough, great, you go down. But the community care doesn't talk to each other. The hospitals barely talk to each other. And so what happens is the flow of services is not always as seamless as it should be because, we've got these little empires, the mm-hmm. Central East Lynn, the Southeast Lynn. And so we've created these fiefdoms that now run almost independently. And mm-hmm. and until you step outside the Lynn, then all of a sudden you start to see how just parochial these places can be anyway.
So what do we need to do, Rob? What do you think our next step should be then as voters, as electors, as patients? I mean, we can't just continue to rail at the hospital. We can't continue to scream we need more money in healthcare. What we need is direct access to how the Lynns are funded. We need to know that, and they need to be accountable. That's what we need to have. Maybe elected representatives of the Lynn.
That could be a small step in the right direction. However, another thing that came out just in the last 2 weeks is there was talk in the media about a medical arts building,
mm-hmm.
and they're looking at a $10 million building to be built up next to the hospital. Now, this is interesting because back in 2010, when there was the financial crisis, a proposal was put forward to fundraise locally to create this very same project
mm-hmm.
To consolidate, and then it would be part of a revenue model for the hospital. So they would have run this medical center. They would have had it. It would have been local monies that would have paid for it, but mm-hmm. those revenues from leasing the space would have started to feed and become a revenue stream for the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And yet that idea never got never really found legs when the crisis was on. Well, here we are 4 years later, and obviously private sector. Dr. Isak and the former hospital chair, and he was also sitting on the board when this idea came forward in 2010.
Mm-hmm.
Suddenly now they have a private proposal going forward, and they're looking for $2 million in investment for this $10 million project. So I wonder what that's all about. Is that do you see that as being a good sign? That the community is prepared to invest money in a medical arts building? Is that something we really need? Is that going to help?
Well, I guess the goal here is to. I mean, right now we've got doctors scattered. Right, we've got a clinic here, we've got a clinic here with a few doctors, and a clinic over here with a few doctors. And what they're talking about doing is building one facility that would house all of them. And that way, if you were at hospital and your doctor was in the health clinic next door, it would be easier for them to do. I mean, I can understand the motivation here, and I get the sell job. And something you mentioned actually is part of this as well. I mean, this is going to be a revenue driver for Northumberland Hills Hospital as well. So it sounds to me like they've basically gone back to the drawing board on what the original proposal was in 2010. And maybe tweaked it a little bit, trying to find some private-public partnership going on there, the three Ps, as it were. and maybe they're moving forward. But again, this isn't going to happen until they raise that first $2 million, right?
Yeah. Again, you know, here we are, another form of tax, is it? I don't know, but it's interesting how we've got our small rural community has to put up so much just mm-hmm. so that we can have basic health care services in our community. Mm-hmm. Rather strange.
Well, and the odd part, of course, is that money's going to come from wealthier residents. I mean, that's not the poor who are going to be donating money to this hospital. It's going to be, you know, some well-heeled, probably anyway. People who are successful business persons and what have you that are going to donate the money. Maybe we'll get money from the Rotary. Who knows? But again, it's not a grassroots program, is it? It's not getting funding from the ground up. It's funding from the upper echelon. And one, it does lead one to wonder whether or not they're looking for maybe a boutique style healthcare service provider that's adjacent to the hospital. Is that what they're talking about?
I don't know. I don't know enough details. Just what I've read in the...
I mean, just what we've read here. I mean, it's at early stages, obviously. The group spearheading this is... The concept is a two-story building possibly attached to the hospital for full accessibility. A minimum of 40,000 square feet. It would be a non-profit corporation and with lease opportunities. Potential tenants would be healthcare and wellness practitioners. So again, your physiotherapists, maybe your naturopaths, what have you. But I guess what they're trying to do is fill this gap that has obviously been left by the lack of provincial funding.
Well, but here's the other side of that, though. But you know, right now there are all sorts of landlords across the region who are leasing space to doctors. Now, once those doctors move out or providers move into this new building, then what happens to all those empty spaces? Mm-hmm. You know, are we just shuffling deck chairs on the Titanic here? You know, because there's going to be ramifications for the larger community and the larger economy when that shift happens. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, we've got that white elephant building across from the former East High School that the doctor built quite a number of years ago. And I don't think that's ever been filled.
Nope.
And that was meant to be, again, same idea. It was going to be all these square feet for all these mm-hmm. medical practitioners and nobody, you know, could we be left with the same kind of boondoggle here?
Well, we could because, you know, let's be honest, that facility was built down there on King Street East because it was in close proximity to Coburg Hospital. And then very soon after it was built, Coburg Hospital moved.
That's right.
And so we see this. I mean, the same thing up at William Street there over by where the Petro-Canada is. And, you know, it just seems to me that they're trying to put everyone within proximity to the hospital. But as you say, they're going to leave a lot of retail space that's going to be available for rent that really, who's renting it? Who's going to take up that space? So as you say, are we just reshuffling the chairs on the Titanic? That's a good question. You know, we're going to take a quick break, but we're going to come back with more of this conversation in just a few minutes. Please stick around. You're listening to Northumberland 89.7, truly local radio.
Starting your own business is an exciting time in your life, but are you aware of your legal responsibilities as a business owner? Jim McGrath specializes in business law and knows what needs to be done to protect you and your investment. Jim has been a lawyer for over 30 years and understands the law, so you don't have to. As a local resident and an entrepreneur himself, Jim McGrath is a trusted source in our community for business owners just like you. Call 905-373-1999 and let Jim McGrath give you the legal peace of mind you need.
January 7th, 2013, Small Town Radio begins broadcasting live on internet radio. December 9th, 2013, Truly Local Radio broadcasts for the first time on FM radio. December 9th, 2014, Truly Local Radio celebrates 1 year of broadcasting live throughout Northumberland County. Join us December 5th and 6th as we celebrate this fantastic milestone in the Northumberland area with our Truly Local Radiothon. Come out and help support this unique radio experience by making a donation and enter for your chance to win great hourly prizes. And don't forget to ask about our many silent auction items. Thank you for your continued support in Truly Local Radio, Northumberland 89.7.
Hometown Bingo is your community connection for fun and excitement 7 days a week. This month at Hometown Bingo,
November 29th matinee and 3:30 sessions are Christmas Cash Bingo. All regular games are increased by $100. Dual Dab games, 3 at $50 and 1 at $100. Shutter games are at $50. Mini Progressive, and Accumulator games, minimum $250. And the jackpot gives you a second chance at $500.
Hometown Bingo in Coburg, 884 Division Street, just south of Elgin on the east side. Check out their website at hometownbingo.ca.
The three most visited sites on the web are Google, Facebook, and YouTube. For a business to thrive in such times, they have to make use of as many of these channels as possible. Is your business marketing through these platforms? Matthews Media is now offering a selection of social media marketing packages available for any size of business. We set up, customize, and push your content across all relevant online profiles, driving prospective clients toward your business. To find out more about online and social media marketing, visit our website at matthewsmedia.ca or call 905-375-9520.
For over 25 years, Pritchard's Climate Care has been your personal climate expert in the Northumberland area. Pritchard's offers complete heating and air conditioning service and repair for your home or business. We make sure the air you breathe is healthy and comfortable. Pritchard's Climate Care has become one of Southern Ontario's most trusted installers of heating and air conditioning products. Sign up for our We Care maintenance plans and get your furnace service for half off our regular service price. Pritchard's Climate Care, we're not just your climate experts, we're your neighbors. Call us at 905-885-8216 or toll free at 1-877-791-6975.
Head to the Royal Canadian Legion this month and catch these great events.
Meat draws of ham and turkey will be held on December 5th, 6th, 12th, and 13th, Fridays at 5 p.m. and Saturdays at 3 p.m. On December 12th, the Ladies Auxiliary Lunch in the Club Room and a silent auction will be run up until the end of the meat draw. On the 13th, entertainment in the lounge with Sounds of Time from 7 to 11 p.m. And on the 16th, Ladies Night Christmas Party all kicks off at 7 p.m. Tickets are just $6 at the bar. And as a reminder, there will be no general meeting in December.
The Royal Canadian Legion Branch 133 is located at 136 Orr Street in Colbert. Call 905-372-2231 to become a member today.
Check engine. Oh, man.
Don't worry. I'm here for you.
Oh, good. Wait, who are you?
I'm the Midas Touch, and you need what I've got.
Really?
Visit Midas, and I'll look after your engine. I can also service your brakes, rotate your tires, change the oil, everything you need, and nothing you don't.
Like, right now?
Yes, now. I literally have nothing better to do.
Visit Midas at 6 Strathy Road in Cobourg for a $24 oil change, and we'll check your car's vitals for free on most vehicles. For details, call Midas at 905-372-1959.
Trust the Midas Touch.
Looking for some musical magic? Every Sunday at 2 p.m., The Search scours the earth for that little magical musical moment that will light up your day. 2 p.m. Sunday afternoons, The Search on Northumberland 89.7, truly local radio.
And welcome back to The Drive Time here on Northumberland 89.7, talking to Rob Washburn. Now, one of the things you mentioned during the break was this citizens group that had gotten together in 2010 to protest, if you will, or to fight the cuts that were being discussed. Have they gone away or have they disappeared?
You don't hear much from them right now, but I don't think until we know the scope of the cuts that are going to be proposed by these consultants that you were talking about earlier, Dave. Mm-hmm. It's a little hard to say. Oftentimes, that's what gets people riled up. In these early days, nobody usually steps forward. But what was interesting the last time around was that the hospital created an advisory panel to look at services and then come back and say, here's where we think they should be cut. And it was citizens and hospital staff that and administration that did that. In looking over what we're seeing now, it looks like, you know, there's a consultant that's getting together with some board reps and a LIN rep, and they're going to talk about a strategy. And it all sounds very wonderful and very professional. But, you know, when's the public going to get its say? And, you know, having a meeting at some point down the road, I don't think it's going to cut it. I think, you know, this would be a really good time to see another citizens group formed that can be monitoring the process as we go through. And God bless the board of directors. I know they do things best they can, and they try to act in the best interest of the community. But if we're going to be cutting another $1 million out of the budget, mm-hmm. and further reduction of services, I think, you know, it'd be good to see people getting involved early and getting some public consultation.
Well, one of the things that Doug Mann has said, and he says he can't emphasize enough, that belt tightening required to balance in the coming year is not pleasant. That said, he said it's better than the alternative, which frankly is program or service cuts. And the board, he says the board is not prepared to go down that road. So they are more than aware that the people of West Northumberland, the primary users of Northumberland Hills Hospital, are very wary of any additional cuts. They don't want to see cuts to services. As you say, that would definitely motivate any type of citizens group to get back into the game and say, you know what, this is enough. Enough is enough is enough.
Well, let's just hope some thoughtful consideration is given to engaging the public early mm-hmm. in the process rather than waiting till budgets are set or, you know, amounts are decided or programs are mm-hmm. going, and then all of a sudden we get this, as we did the last time, you know, these, we're cutting the number of beds, we're cutting rehab, all these kinds of things, and then people are reacting. Mm-hmm. I mean, that ends up being more confrontational, and people get angry, and everybody gets worked mm-hmm. up, and that just doesn't lead to anything productive.
Well, no, you're right. There needs to be consultation with the general public. You know, I was watching Dave the other day. It's a movie with the actor whose name escapes me, but there's a point there where he's sitting down with he's supposed to be the president of the United States. He's actually a stand-in, and they're going to cut this service, which is going to provide breakfast for kids. Doesn't cost a whole lot of money. And he says to his group, okay, well, we're going to sit down right now and we're going to figure out where we're going to get that money from. We're going to do that. We're sitting here right now. So we need to take it from this, then we'll take it from here. If we need to take it from the military, then we'll take it from the military. If we need to take it from roads, we'll take it. But these kids are going to get their morning breakfast program. And the same process really needs to be done when it comes to healthcare. I mean, we need to involve all stakeholders. And the biggest stakeholders, of course, are the general public. So there needs to be public consultation. And I would strongly urge any consultants that have been hired, the very first thing you should do, in my opinion, is have a public consultation and talk to the general public and say, okay, here's where we are. This is where we have to be. How would you like us to get there? You know, and that would at least at that point, anything that did happen or anything that did come out of it would come out of it with the full knowledge of those stakeholders, those people who use the service. I mean, it's almost incumbent upon them. I mean, I know that we have pre-budget consultations at council before the budget is passed at the municipal government level. So why is it we can't have the same thing at the healthcare level?
Or even, you know, get it pared down to here are the 10, you know, the 10 things we're looking at cutting. Mm-hmm. You know, we're going to have to cut 5 of these. You know, let's talk about which 5 we're going to cut rather than, you know, a sort of a final formula and then everybody gets wound up at, you know, you're cutting this or you're cutting that or, you know, this is going to mm-hmm. cost me more or this isn't going to work or here's some stuff that needs to be thought about. So
do we need to start looking at the Nordic model? I mean, the Nordic model for healthcare, I mean, I've talked about this on my show at least once this year. You know, a few years ago, they had a plebiscite. I mean, they were in the same boat we are provincially. More than 50% of their budget was going to healthcare. And this is, I believe, in Denmark, if I remember correctly. It might have been Sweden. But what they did was they held a national plebiscite. They said, okay, you want universal healthcare? No problem. Tell us what services you want. And what they did was everyone, you know, sent in their responses and said, this is a core service. This is a core service. This I don't mind paying for. This is a core service. This, okay, I could do without. And they put together a comprehensive plan for universal health care in their country based upon what the core needs were from the people. Now, there were some people who walked away. They weren't too happy because XYZ got cut, or maybe they weren't covering physiotherapy anymore, as an example. But they were covering everything else. And the wait times have been reduced to negligible numbers. I mean, what they were able to do is determine through that plebiscite what were the core healthcare services that the public simply refused to do without. And I believe they got it down to like 100 very specific items. And that's what they covered. Anything else after that, unfortunately, it's not covered.
Well,
is that the model we need to start looking at, or at least some kind of public consultation?
I don't know. I mean, honestly, I don't, because informing public policy like that can be so complex, mm-hmm. and I really appreciate that. And that's why I'm reticent to sort of jump in and say, well, they should do this or they should do that. Mm-hmm. But one thing that we haven't talked about is, you know, when you have an economy that's based on precarious labor or on part-time without benefits, when people don't have corporate plan, insurance plans that they pay in through union dues or through employer benefits, mm-hmm. This leaves people in a horrible position because, you know, maybe we could afford the services not to be paid by insurance plans if we could afford to pay for the insurance. we could cover that. But what happens is you've got seniors who don't have insurance plans. It's got to come out of their own pocket, and they don't get the full service. Mm-hmm. They can't afford all the drugs. They can't afford the physiotherapy. They can't afford the private dialysis clinic. You know, all those kinds of things. And you know, when you complain to Harper about not funding health care, we also need to talk about better jobs, a better economy that has full-time jobs, that people do have benefits, that people start to realize that, you know, all these things that we've fought for and are important need to be in place so that we, you know, maybe there are alternatives rather than, you know, the one that are so stark where we either lose services or we can't afford have the service.
Well, in my conversation with Chris Levitt after he left the studio, or after he was off air, he talked about this because he is the president of the local steelworkers union, Local 13173. And he has people coming into him all the time saying, I thought we had this covered. Wasn't this covered as part of our package? And there's so many things that are being de-indexed now from union packages, from what they were covered for what they're not covered for, like things like physiotherapy in some cases. And so he's seen a lot more of that coming down. And, you know, he's in a union. So, I mean, even unionized workers are having to fight now for these, what are core services. So it really does, it does beg the question, though, where is the responsibility on the part of the government, and how do they get away with just saying, oh, we're not going to do it anymore?
If we have universal health care.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that is the real question, and that's why this protest is happening this week. That's why it's at Rick Norlock's office, because he is the Member of Parliament for Northumberland Quinte West, and frankly, people are tired of not getting an answer. You know, you can only ask a question so often before you realize that nobody is listening, you know, and I know myself and so many other people, I mean, people with disabilities who can't afford the medication they need, simple respirology medication that you might need, can't afford it, therefore you don't take it. And if you can't afford it and you don't take it, you don't get better. It's that simple. And so is that the kind of society we want? Do we want to go back to the way it was prior to universal health? Do we want to be like the United States where bankruptcy is the leading – health care is the leading cause of bankruptcy?
Well, and just look, you know, how many times we see in the paper or here on the radio or in the television these appeals from our neighbors, our friends, people in our community who cannot afford a certain treatment or cannot afford certain types of care, and they're appealing to the rest of us to help them out because these things aren't covered. And is that really fair? Is that really equitable? Mm-hmm. Is that really the system that we want? You know, are you and I going to end up gumming our toast in a cardboard box because we can't afford the care that we need?
Well, that is a good question. That's a question we're going to have to ask ourselves at home, listeners. And we will be back with Rob Washburn next week on Wednesday for Consider This Live. I'm Dave Glover. You've been listening to Northumberland 89.7. This has been The Drive Time. We're going to leave you with a little Elvis Costello. Maybe we're not. No, we're going to go right to the Cedar Rail Show, which is set to begin in just a moment. Thanks for tuning in, and I will be back tomorrow here in the driver's seat. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Northumberland 89.7 is CFWN, truly local radio, serving Northumberland County, a not-for-profit volunteer community radio station.